I just believe in the process, and we're going to win going through the process.
Now, Bills Mafia, it's time for the main event. So sit back and enjoy the show.
Bills Mafia, welcome to the Red, White and Buffalo Blues, a UK Bills podcast, Bills News with a UK twist. Got Robin here.
Good evening.
We are joined by one half of the Shout podcast team, Mr. Ryan Talbot. Ryan, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
Long time. Long time no speak, but then again, you were up over in London, and obviously, was it your second time in London or your first time in London?
Oh, first time in London. Unbelievable experience. Loved it. My wife and I both say we want to go back there, you know, not just for a Bills game, but just in general and enjoy it some more. We had an awesome time, a great experience. I know, you know, the game didn't go the way that Bills fans wanted, but the week as a whole, just seeing Bills fans everywhere that we were at, everywhere that we were going, you know, that aside, just the experience of London was unbelievable too. Checking out the sights, just being outside of the United States for a football game was kind of surreal and an experience that I'll never forget.
Yeah, well, at least you haven't heard Robin actually moan about the food.
It's a running joke on the show. Yeah, I was mad all day because of the quality of the food, because we got like the premium ticket. So anyone who listens to the show will know I never miss an opportunity to complain about £300 as well. So that's like $350, $400 for really cheap, nasty food. I was very unhappy, and I let everyone know. Did you get to any association football, any of soccer games at all when you were there?
I didn't get to, but Matt went to a game, and I'm blanking on who they went to go see that day. It's one of the older.
It was Fulham.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Yes. Okay.
So they had a great time with that. I had already had some other plans that day, and then we did the boat tour that night. And so I think in the end I won out because they were there a little bit too late for the soccer game, and I was able to make that boat tour. So
yeah,
it worked out for me.
Yeah, it was a good night. I mean, obviously, you also did. Was it you that went did the AFC Richmond, the Ted Lasso?
Yes. Well, last day that we were there, we headed over to Richmond and we did all of the walking tour there on our own, and loved that because that's one of my favorite shows of all time. So that was a great experience too.
The result wasn't the best, but I say everyone enjoyed it. Everyone had a lot of fun, so we can't really complain. People made a load of good memories. Obviously, you made a lasting memory, and obviously made such an impression that you'll come back and then hopefully next time, if it's with the Bills, then hopefully we'll get better luck. If not,
third time lucky. Please not be the Jags again. So
agreed on that one.
But well, obviously, this off season's been really, really eye opening. I think in the fact that obviously Joe Brady's got the interim tag taken off, and obviously we've had the whole what looks like to be a defensive reshuffle, almost. The fact that we got Bobby Babich as a new DC, loads of turnovers. How do you see that playing out for the upcoming season?
Yeah, that's a great question, because Sean McDermott is still keeping the cards close to his vest in terms of who's going to call the plays. I think eventually this season, whether it's right out of the gate at week one or at some point in mid-season, he's going to hand over the reins and Babich will be the play caller. I almost feel like that had something to do with him committing to stay in Buffalo. And I know he was linked to a lot of other jobs. I think he only did one other interview other than the Bills interview, obviously, at that point in time. But, you know, I think that was obviously part of the agreement. And you're right. There's a lot of defensive turnover roster-wise here. And we're sitting here and you're saying, okay, defensive tackle, they have Ed Oliver. They brought back Daquan Jones. And there's really not much else there right now at DT. Defensive end, they bring back Epinesa. That's a good thing. Von Miller takes a pay cut to stay on board. They have Russo. But there's a lot of depth guys that need to get filled in there. And is it going to be Kingsley Jonathan at D end? Are they going to draft a guy? linebacker, they're looking pretty strong there with Matt Milano. You know, anticipation. You know, you at least anticipate he's coming back at full strength. You know what Terrell Bernard did in his first season here, and they bring in Moreau as a depth guy. So I like that. And but on the back end, it's a little, you know, there's a lot of questions there now too, because yes, Poyer and Hyde, I both feel like we're on the end of their careers, out of their primes. They both look like they lost a little bit of a step last year. That's all Bills fans have known, though, under this regime in terms of that starting safety duo. And, you know, what Hyde still is going to do is up in the air. Poyer obviously signed a very cheap deal with Miami, 1 year, $2 million. They bring back Taylor Rapp. They signed Cam Lewis. Lewis makes it sound like he could be in the mix for a starting job. But I would like to think they're either going to draft someone, or maybe they're going to turn their attention to free agency and see who's still out there after they just, you know, different position. But they were willing to spend some money on Eric Armstead. I think they'd be willing to spend some money on one of the better safeties, and it will be a lot less money than what I'm guessing Armstead was going to get from Jacksonville. Different position, different pay range, obviously, but maybe they want to do that because there's questions there. And even in the cornerback room, I have a lot of faith in Rasul Douglas and Christian Benford, but they lose some depth in Dane Jackson. They cut Tre'Davious White with that post June 1st designation. So there's a lot of pieces that need to be rebuilt. And if there was ever a year they have to hit a home run in the draft, this is it.
Yeah. I think looking at it, you're looking at the whole philosophy now of it, because obviously they're playing more. Last year they played, especially on the back end, they were playing more zone type defense. But they've started bringing in guys that played or coached man coverage in Adai from Miami. He was more of a man coverage, taught man coverage a little bit more. Do you see there's a certain philosophy change from what McDermott has done to what he wants to see? Go forward, and what Babich can bring to the table.
I wouldn't be shocked if you'd like to mix in a little bit more of man defense. I mean, I think that zone's been good to this team more times than not, but they haven't been able to play man maybe in situations where it would have benefited them. And you know, they spent a first round pick on Kyrie Elam a few years ago, and he kind of quickly fell into the doghouse there with the former secondary coach. So he's going to get a new opportunity, and he might be better suited for man or press man. So I'd like to think they're going to try to mix it up a little bit. That being said, the way that they've been so zone heavy since McDermott has been here, I still think that's going to be their go-to, but you want to be able to change over to man from time to time, especially based on some of the teams you're going to be seeing in the regular season, potentially in the playoffs. And it's not so easy that you can just switch those out interchangeably week after week. There's going to be some times where you want to get out there on a third down or on a certain look, and you want to play man over zone or vice versa.
Yeah. So it's more play design, more what Brady does on the offense. The fact that he actually, more game plans, but obviously can execute those X and O's. And obviously we saw a whole difference in this offense compared to the Dorsey half of the season. So that sort of stuff coming in for the defense.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, listen, on the offense side of the ball too, I still think there's going to be a lot of changes in terms of this truly being a Joe Brady offense. He was still running the previous regime in terms of the system, and he could only add so much in that he wanted to, but that was still the Ken Dorsey / Brian Daboll playbook. I think you're going to see a lot more pre-snap motion with Joe Brady. I think you're going to see Josh Allen under center more, and that's been something that I've been kind of beating the drum for. I like him in shotgun. But you know, I want him under center from time to time. I like the play action. That's another area. I think they're going to up the play action pass. And the way that James Cook was running the ball last year, the way that Ty Johnson ran the ball effectively in a smaller sample size, I think you can hit those bigger plays because defenses will bite on play action from time to time. Even if your run game is not going, there's teams that have success just utilizing the play action pass regardless.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see, because I mean, let's say it's a whole youth movement now in this team, going from obviously when Dermot first came in, having Rick Dennison, having Leslie Frazier, to now having Joe Brady, Bobby Babbage, Marcus West, the new DL coach, Joe Dana, who's only 46, guys that are actually young and, let's say, young and hungry, almost.
Yeah.
And are there to actually really show what they're made of, and obviously building what I've been hearing, obviously what I hear around McDermott's coaching tree.
You know, with Babbage, it's funny. It was just one interview, a one-off at training camp, but I was so blown away with his responses and the way that he talked. Mm-hmm. I went back to Matt and I said, man, this guy's going to be a coordinator in this league sooner rather than later. And, you know, lo and behold, not even a year later, he's now the Bills DC. Yeah. So he has a great mind for this game. The way that he explains things, I love the way that he explained the Terrell Bernard pick at the time. He said, you know, I didn't look at the size of the player. I didn't look at the weight of the player, because you can very easily in your mind say, well, the position X, Y, or Z, they need to be this weight, this size, this height, and go from there. And you eliminate a lot of really good players. He said, I need a player that can get from point A to point B, that's a good tackler. Maybe they're not as tall as what a traditional, you know, inside linebacker is, or whatever the case may be. But then they hit on Bernard, and, you know, that was a pleasant surprise. Obviously, no one really saw that coming. And on the other side of the ball, Joe Brady, you know, I felt for Joe Brady when he first came to Buffalo, because it wasn't that long ago that he was the hottest name in coaching, and he was at LSU, the passing game coordinator. And he takes this job with the Carolina Panthers, and it wasn't a good relationship between him and Matt Rhule. It was kind of like an arranged marriage, so to speak, because Rhule didn't really want him there. He didn't really let him kind of do the things that he wanted to do. And within a year and a half or so, he's out of that job. And it just shows how quickly your star can burn out in this league. Mm-hmm. And luck, you know, comes to Buffalo, gets to work with Josh Allen, gets to work with some good offensive players and offensive minds. And now he's been able to rebuild himself. And if he comes out and the Bills offense fares very well this year, well, you know, hopefully the Bills have someone else in mind in that next person up, because he could be getting head coaching interviews before long too. So it's a good young coaching staff, a lot of good young minds. It's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out.
I think looking at, I mean, obviously Robert knows this and some people listen to the show, but I've actually, when we had the little break from when we got dumped out by the Chiefs to about a few weeks ago, I've just done a complete, like, utter research on pretty much everything and storylines for this, obviously, upcoming season. Obviously, I switched back to Brady and just trying to look back at what he actually used at LSU, and obviously the limited sample size he had at Carolina. Obviously, you mentioned that he likes to do play action, and we could hopefully see a lot more of that. And obviously the run play action, I think, what he likes to do is obviously play the spread and play to the strengths of the team that he's actually got around him. So obviously with Josh, you know that you're going to get a lot more RPOs, play action, because he's good. He'll challenge you both in the air and on the ground. Cause he's what I think he used in, when he had Burrow at LSU, he used play action about 26% of all his dropbacks that season.
Yeah. Yeah. So those are just things that I anticipate happening. And, you know, you saw what he did when he came over, is that with the interim label, I mean, he took the chains off of Allen as a runner. And he said, this is part of his game, for better or worse. Yes, there's risk. There's a chance of injury, but you can't take that away from his game right now. Now, in a few years, as he gets a little bit older, maybe that it slowly comes out of the game, but they need him to be able to do that. But they also need him to be under center, to take those play action passes and hit on passes downfield. And like I said, the play action pass, if you get someone to bite, if you get someone to hesitate even slightly with an arm that Allen has, he's going to be able to hit some players downfield, whether it's a Stephon Diggs, a Khalil Shakir, who's shown he has a little bit of speed to his game, or maybe it's the first round pick that they have in this year's draft. You know, an AD Mitchell or a Worthy out of Texas, a real big speedster there. Maybe it's someone different, but whatever it is, you know, I think he's going to come into this, and he has a game plan in mind for a lot of these pieces. Dalton Kincaid, you saw the uptick in his usage, and it's only going to get more now in year two, getting to know him and his strengths. And James Cook, I know James Cook had a lot of frustrating drops at times for what should have been touchdowns, but he also made some really good plays in the passing game. He looked really good as a runner. So you're going to utilize him too. So they still do have more weapons than I see a lot of people worried about free agency in the draft, and I get it. You know, the Bills don't have much money to spend, and they can't go out and get all these playmakers that you're seeing some of the competition in the AFC getting right now. But they do have some good pieces there. I still think this is a roster that's a playoff team, and as long as you have Josh Allen, you're going to be in the mix here to make noise once the postseason comes.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question about just to get your idea, Ryan? What do you think is going on with Stephon Diggs? Do you think my worry is that we've seen that we've maybe seen the best of him already, that we've maybe got another year left and I'm kind of in two minds about when Joe Brady took over, he maybe was trying to do something a little bit different, and maybe Stephon Diggs wasn't being featured as much, wasn't being considered that true number one guy. And I start thinking about, well, what happens in the draft? Are you trying to maybe draft a WR wide receiver two that maybe takes over as a wide receiver one as their long-term planner? Maybe Diggs knows that the end is coming, so maybe his heart's not in it. He's the kind of man everyone talks about, but he's almost a forgotten man slightly in the offense. What do you think's going on?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if he's going to be another 1,400-yard type of season in him anymore at this point, like he had in those first few years where he really came onto the scene and he and Allen connected immediately. I still think he's that guy that's going to get you over 1,000 yards receiving. I do agree, though, that when Joe Brady came on board, there was a big shift in terms of his usage, his targets. And, you know, you could argue that it was for the betterment of the Bills, because there were times where early on in the season, it felt like Allen or the game plan was trying to force the ball to Diggs. And it was some games it worked, sometimes it didn't. And they were backed up and it put them in bad spots. Brady comes along, they start spreading the ball out more. They start getting other guys utilized. We saw the way that Khalil Shakir ended the season. Yeah. We saw the even guys like Ty Johnson stepping up for this offense, and players you weren't expecting. So he found ways to utilize players and utilize their strengths. I think with the full offseason, he's going to still try to find ways to utilize Diggs. But yeah, I mean, the Bills would be foolish to not try to draft the heir apparent to Diggs in the draft this year. And you know, at pick 28, you're sitting there saying, well, who are they going to be able to get? And this is one of the deepest drafts in quite some time at wide receivers. So there's still going to be some very good players. You're obviously not going to be in the mix for the Marvin Harrison Jr. or the Roma Dunze or not even Brian Thomas Jr. Yeah. I mean, any of those top three or four, I don't think you're in the range unless you make this big trade up. And obviously, yeah, Malik Nabers, no way there either. But Ladd McConkey, Xavier Worthy, like I mentioned, A.D. Mitchell, Mitchell, who kind of reminds me a little bit of D.K. Metcalf in terms of the size, the speed, the freakishness. I would love to see him be that pick. So, and even an Xavier Leggett, he's someone that I was kind of a second-round pick on going into the combine, going into even before that in the Senior Bowl. I thought he had a really nice week at the Senior Bowl. I thought he had a really nice combine. I think that he checks a lot of the boxes that this team likes. And a lot of people are out on Keon Coleman, too, after his slow 40 time, which I understand. But he did exceptionally well on the route running in terms of the speed. He was the second, third fastest receiver in certain routes. And, you know, when you're out there playing football, you're not just running 40 yards downfield in a straight line. You're running routes. And if he's a good route runner that picks up speed in that regard, he's going to be just fine in an offense, whether it's Buffalo's or elsewhere. So there are guys at the end of round one that the Bills can pick up that can be that wide receiver two this year, but eventually take over as wide receiver one.
Yeah, I think because it's such a deep draft, and this is the one thing that they've actually found with the coordinators. They've both got coordinators that love their philosophy is player development and all that. And with such a deep draft, especially at wide receiver. I mean, I've been looking at names like that have actually NFL deadlines. Luke McCaffrey of Rice and Brendan Rice of USC, Jerry Rice's boy.
Yeah, I think Rice is actually shooting up the draft boards in terms of where he might go. I wouldn't be shocked if he was a day two pick, maybe even an earlier day two pick. He's done really well testing as of late. Showed some talent at USC. McCaffrey's more of a raw prospect. He just kind of converted from quarterback to wide receiver. And you know, you like players like that, though, because they know the game. They know how the quarterback thinks. I think the bloodlines and the name might boost him up to an early day three pick, but maybe that's Buffalo, because I expect the Bills to double dip at wide receiver. Just like I expect them to double dip it maybe along the, you know, defensive tackle position potentially. There's certain areas where if they use some of those 11 picks and they pick two players at the same position, I'm not too hurt about it, because like you said, this isn't just a youth movement with the coaching staff. It's also going to be a youth movement with the players, and there's going to be some growing pains on the field because of that. But we saw 2 years ago with the Chiefs when they were playing a lot of rookies, a lot of young guys. Yeah. They went through growing pains on the field in season, but they made the playoffs. They make it to the Super Bowl. They win the Super Bowl. And by the end of the year, those rookies were playing more like second, third year players because of all the reps that they had in season.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that I think the Bills fans are going to have to like temper their opinion or their expectations this year, obviously, with the turnover on that defense. But you look at how other teams in the past have actually done it. I mean, you look at what Green Bay have done on offense since drafting Jordan Love, getting younger and younger on receivers. And obviously, that started to pay off this year. And obviously, the Chiefs seem to draft almost within 2 years ahead of time in anticipation, and they're ruthless in their in all their cuts and their releases. So there are many different ways to do it. I just feel that Bills fans just have to just tone down the expectation of we're going to go 17-0 Super Bowl and all that.
No chance of that. I think we go 17-0 every single season. I've never backed against the Bills game in my life. Every single preview, I pick the Bills to win. So
that's amazing.
Just on D-line, jump over Matt for a second. That's what I've heard about the draft, that wide receiver, pretty deep, and D-linemen of various flavours and descriptions, D-tackles, D-ends. Is that the sense you get as well, Ryan, of the draft this year could be very good for D-lines?
Yeah, I think there's some really good D-tackles. I think there's a potential first-round pick out of Texas that the Bills could go after, even a second-round pick out of Texas. It depends on what you want. There's a big boy that's like 366, 370 that will clog up the middle in the run game. Probably a day two pick.
Yeah.
The edge rushers, you know, at 28, you're probably getting a guy that's raw or has upside, like a Chop Robinson out of Penn State. And there's nothing wrong with that because he tests off the charts. He has the athleticism. I know some fans have already said, well, we did that with Aaron Maben years ago. And I understand that, but no two players are the same. The way that the Bills scout is a lot different than the way those regimes scouted back then too. So whoever the Bills end up picking, I think that they're going to base it on traits, base it on character, base it on upside. And whether it's a wide receiver in round one, a D lineman in round one, you know, I think that they're probably still steaming that they didn't get a third round compensatory pick last week for that Tremaine Edmonds, you know, letting him walk in free agency, because I'm sure they were banking on that. When they traded their third for Rasul Douglas in season, they're probably like, wow, we're going to get one back. They didn't get that. They're stacked with day three picks, and they could bundle some of those. They could bundle them with a day two pick, like their second rounder, and really move up high. There's a lot of things that the Bills can do. And, you know, same thing with safety. If they don't go safety in free agency the rest of the way here, there's a lot of safeties that are going to be available on day two and some really good ones that are still going to be available on day three, because that's become a position. I've called it the running back of the defense, where it's kind of become devalued, and good players really fall further down in the draft because of that at that specific position.
Yeah, I think going on to again with the draft, I mean, the last few years it's almost seemed like the Bills have tried to be reactive rather than looking at further years down there. Obviously, the first year when they actually got done by the Chiefs, they actually decided to go big on pass rush and all that. And maybe this year with the whole roster upheaval, all the free agents, losses and all that, that they actually start their time and just really pick out and hopefully have a word with Brady and Babich to say, what type of players do you want to see
right
in the team? Because as I said earlier, with the quote from Babich last year, it's not about what he can actually do, it's can you get me a player that does this, does that?
Right.
So maybe that's the outlook looking, and obviously with 11 picks, you will probably see that that move up to get more picks, or even a move down in round one, which most people won't like to pick. But then you've got the capital to go back up a couple of times.
Right. Yeah. I mean, this, if there was ever a year for Bean to trade down rather than trade up, because he's been very aggressive about trying to trade up in years past in round one, this might be it. Because again, if you trade from 28 to early on day two, you get a second round pick and a third round pick from another team, for instance, you're going to get three players between the second, the third, you know, whatever they have there, whatever the trade ends up being, their second, the second, and the third, they're going to get some really good players. It could be a wide receiver, safety, D lineman. It could be, you know, early picks have usually been, let's try to find a missing piece that can get us over the hump, like Dalton Kincaid last year. And listen, there's nothing wrong with that. He was a great pick. It's been on day two, day three, where they've been kind of thinking more long-term. And a few years ago when they drafted Terrell Bernard, I remember the outrage by the fans because there's Edmonds, there's Milano. They only run two linebackers. There's no spot for this guy. He gets out there as a rookie at one point. I think it was in a blowout game or something. He kind of looked like a deer in the headlights. And there was a player probably that every fan loved in that round that this guy could help us out right now. But then you look at year two and what Terrell Bernard did and how the Bills let a linebacker leave, sign a 4-year, $72 million deal with the Bears, and they didn't panic. They didn't go out and spend on a linebacker of their own. They said, we're gonna let the competition play out. We like a lot of these young guys that we have. And they did the same thing last year when they drafted Dorian Williams. It's like,
yeah,
third, and again, third round, a day two pick where it's, okay, how many linebackers does this team need? But maybe they start doing that other positions, and I'm okay with that. Maybe it's a first-round pick at wide receiver and a third-round pick if they trade into the third round, for instance, or a fourth-round pick at wide receiver. And that's okay because one might be your future wide receiver one, and one might end up being your wide receiver two. You have to keep thinking of the now and the future. It has to be a mix that works hand-in-hand.
Yeah, and we know that he does have a knack to find those hidden gems in the later rounds. Obviously, Shakir, Christian Benford, to a lesser extent, Levi Wallace, undrafted free agent at the time, and Dane Jackson. So we know this.
Got his money, my guy, Dane.
Yeah.
Nothing I like more than a late sixth, seventh undrafted guy who gets paid $4 million a year. For the Panthers, love it for him.
Khalil Shakir was a fifth round pick. I mean, they have found Matt Milano was a fifth round pick.
They have fourth.
So they've done very well on day three of the draft. People have actually argued that their day three drafts have been better than some of their day two drafts. And you know, that there's actually a case to be made for that, I would argue, because they have found some really good players later on in those drafts.
And as I say, it's a good that majority or certain areas, certain positions are that deep that you are going to find those hidden diamonds in the rough, so to speak. And it's what we really are looking forward to, seeing how this whole team starts to shift that mentality to actually finally get over that hurdle. I mean, obviously they say, you get media pundits or national media saying the window's shut and all that, but this window's never going to shut as long as Allen's.
I think if you have a six or six and a half or seven out of 10 quarterback, I think Super Bowl window may be real. And the one I always think of was Joe Flacco and the Ravens.
Mm-hmm.
A good, but maybe not brilliant quarterback. Good, perhaps very good.
Yeah.
Had a couple of very good years, and they had the defense just at the right time with not too many guys getting paid. And that was a Super Bowl window where the Ravens probably had two or three shots at it. I think if you've got Josh Allen, I think that window stays open.
I agree with that. The only thing I'll say is that I agree completely. The Super Bowl window is always open with Josh Allen, but man, the AFC is loading up year after year. And you look at the Houston Texans and some of the moves that they've made and how good they were last year with all those young guys. And you expect the Bengals to bounce back this year with Burrow back in the fold. And you saw how good the Ravens were. Steelers are trying to kind of close the gap in that division. The Browns were great. If they can even get adequate play out of Deshaun Watson, they could make some noise with that defense. And Jim Harbaugh with the Chargers, if there's one coach that I think can fix the Chargers, that's it. The Chiefs are going to be in it. I think Miami is looking at this year as their all-in year because, they've made some nice moves in free agency, but they're going to be paying Tua over $50 million soon. They're going to have to pay Jalen Waddle here very soon. So this is kind of like this all-in year now before those kind of cap hits take hold, and they're trying to make noise. They have a very good secondary now. They signed the top cornerback that was remaining on the market today, and you add that to Jalen Ramsey, and you add that to that safety room now that includes Poyer. They've got talent. So Colts, the list goes on and on, it feels like, in the AFC, where the NFC, it feels like the exact opposite. There's I think the Green Bay is an up-and-coming team. I think the 49ers are always in the mix. The Lions are going to be very good. I think Atlanta is going to make a lot of noise this year. And I have my reservations about Kirk Cousins, but there's a lot of young talent there on that offense that he is going to be able to work off of, whether you're talking Bijan Robinson, whether you're talking Drake London, Kyle Pitts, and they keep adding talent around him too. So that's nowhere near as strong of a conference as the AFC. So it's just going to get tougher for Allen and company. But yes, the window's open as long as he's playing at an elite level.
I think obviously the next few years, obviously, they restructured part of Josh's contract. They didn't do all of it, which in a way is a good thing. Gives them more leeway in the next few years when his cap hits are going to be even higher. But I think this year is more or less of being playing that comp bingo thing. I think it's now, 1.79 million rather than 1.77, the magic. But obviously the next few years, the cap, it's obviously scheduled to go higher and higher. And I've seen projections where the Bills have got a lot more cap for the next couple of years with the restructure, with a little bit more restructure or extension of Josh and his contract. It sort of sets, this year's more of a setup with all these 11 rookies, or if we do go with 11 rookies, however many we get, these younger players to step up ready for that year where you've got that little extra bit of money that you can sprinkle in one or two veteran or big name guys just to help out a little bit more.
Yeah, that's exactly it. They're in a pretty good spot in 2025 cap wise. And like you said, when Allen restructured, they could have used up to $23.2 million with the restructure, and they went to 17-18 range. So they didn't want to kick that can or keep kicking that can down the road and keep raising the potential, like you said, cap it. You expect the salary cap to keep going up, but that was a smart financial move for the now and the later. You freed up some money, but you kept some of it there. So I like the way that they did that. And you're right. You sprinkle some of these young guys in that you're going to draft this year. And I've at least seen more of a willingness from McDermott and company to play their young guys. It felt like early on in his regime, Tremaine Edmonds played because they needed a middle linebacker. They didn't have one. But a lot of rookies, it was a slow play. It was frustrating at times. Kincaid, I still say, would be in that frustrating end because they kind of had him behind Knox. They weren't utilizing him early on in the year. It took an injury to Knox really get him on the field. But they're at least starting to mix these guys in and get them more involved. And this year, they're really going to have to go kind of full bore with a lot of these young players and get him out there on the field and let them take their lumps, because it's one, it's a necessity based on the cap space that they have, but two, it's for the betterment of this team now and in the future.
I want to get both your opinions, especially you, Ryan, being a beat reporter. The whole Deion Dawkins trolling.
Yeah.
What was going through your mind when you first saw it? And then obviously about 10-15 minutes later, it then got, he says, actually signed the extension. Were you there writing a piece ready to go to say he's gone, it's for the best, or it's best for the cap of that? Or were you just there thinking, yeah, he is definitely trolling?
Yeah, I was in the latter end of it. I didn't start any articles. I didn't react. I didn't tweet about it. Maybe I'm kind of numb to it, but he's such a character that I just couldn't really put any stock into the statement or the I'm always going to call Buffalo home message that he had like a day or two before that. I'm like, nah, it didn't make financial sense, first of all, to run from him. Had there been like this huge cap saving, that would have been like, well, maybe, but it didn't make any sense. He's still one of the top young left tackles in the league. That's not someone you move on from either. It's such a key position. So I did not fall for it. I'm very happy to report and say, but I did see a lot of national media members, local media members that were like, what's going on here? And they were thinking the worst. And you listen, I mean, I don't blame them. When a player makes a statement like that, you've been around the league long enough that 99% of the time, those players are being let go, but the other 1% is Deion Dawkins just being Deion Dawkins.
No, Rob. So, Robin, come on. Let's hear your view then. I can't remember what you said in our chat.
It came on just on the back of Gabe Davis kind of releasing a kind of highlight package on social media, and I think there was that thing. Okay, yeah, that was going. But I think the when it came to Gabe, it made sense that he was probably going to go. And if you take a look at the big picture as well, fourth round guy, actually did pretty well in the end. Got 4 years, probably not everything, but he was always going to be attractive to another team. It just the money wasn't going to be there. When it came to Deion Dawkins, it kind of did make sense that if they were going to do anything with him, they were going to extend him at the time. So I didn't allow myself to get carried away. One thing I did want to ask, and when I look at the guys, and you have to take the sort of the emotion and the personality out of it, we'll take it as read that, you know, Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde, let's put them on the ball. Trey White, incredible. You know, the guys gone. But I could, the cold, brutal logic I can understand. And I said this on the last episode of the podcast, as great as those guys were, we didn't win a Super Bowl with them. And there comes a time when you have to make that decision. However, Mitch Morse, that of all the comings and the goings, I think Mitch Morse, I always thought if he was going to go, it was maybe going to be an injury, because I know he's had his concussions. Maybe you get one more year of Mitch and then it, I don't know. That one to me, that one is the only one that made me think that it seemed a year early. I don't know.
I agree with that. I've said on a few radio spots and things, that's the only one that took me by surprise. And I understood the $8.5 million cap hit. You see, he signs a 2-year deal where he's getting paid about $5.25 million per year. And it's like, you know, did the Bills try to go to him and get a pay cut? Were they just dead set on getting the entire $8.5 million and saying, we have some internal options here? But the reason it really surprised me the most is like a day or two before that, they traded Ryan Bates to the Bears for a fifth round pick. And it's like, this was your utility guy across the line. He was your backup center on paper. And if you were going to get rid of Mitch Morse, you thought that it would mean keeping Ryan Bates around. So seeing them both go, it was a little bit of a surprise. And then obviously the Bills come out and say, well, we're going to move McGovern over to center. We're going to give Edwards a chance to win a guard spot. And maybe it works out perfectly. Maybe this line looks great with that, with the new look. But you're messing with it a little bit. This was a very healthy line, which obviously factored into it. But it was a line that played very well together last year. And you had a chance to bring everyone back across the board on that line. And they chose not to. So we'll see how it plays out. But, you know, I said they're playing with fire a little bit in terms of changing it up, and you're going to go into opening day with someone at that left guard spot and McGovern playing a different position for the Bills, at least. I know he has some experience there at center, but
yeah,
it's not as easy said and done as some think.
So does that put like interior offensive line a sneaky need in that draft on the draft? I mean, obviously you've got Torrance, second year round rookie, and is coming into a second year of solid all last season, actually solidified that right guard. Could you see them actually drafting maybe one of the late round guys, maybe like a Matt Lee out of Miami or someone like that, just to actually sit behind McGovern, ready then to move McGovern back, give whoever they draft as a backup center the shot, or go straight into a guard and let Edwards be the backup and be the extra lineman when they go for the jumbo packages?
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if they drafted an O-lineman during this draft on day three, especially at guard specifically, because one, if there's one thing that Brendan Bean has done over the years, he's always had a plethora of O-linemen and D-linemen to come in and compete for spots. And I will say they have a lot of young talent. You know, Vandermark's more of an offensive tackle, but they like him as an up-and-coming player. Alec Anderson can play across the line. He can play guard. He can play center. He can play a little bit outside at tackle. Richard Garage was an undrafted free agent that they brought in, and he made the practice squad and stayed there all year. He was never cut once. They like him. They want to develop him. So they do have some young guys in the wings. And the one thing I'll say is, you know, you look at what Aaron Cromer did from year one to year two with the offensive line in general, with the play and the uptick in play. But you look at the development of the players too.
Yeah.
Spencer Brown never looked better than he did in 2023. And the guard play was outstanding. He took a rookie in Osiris Torrance, and Torrance had some ups and downs, but there was a lot more up play than down play, in my opinion. So he did really well with the starters, but he was able to do enough where Alec Anderson made this 53-man roster. Ryan Vandermark was their swing tackle and someone that they have a lot of faith in. So he has a history of developing these young players now and in the past as well. So whether it's a rookie this year, whether it's some of these young guys that they have on their practice squad or on future deals, I wouldn't be shocked if he's able to develop some other guys too and just keep bringing them along as well.
Yeah. And a couple last points on there. Obviously, draft-wise, as I say, obviously we talk about wide receiver safety being on there. I was speaking to a mate of mine on chat, and he said, obviously defensive ends now be that sneaky need? Obviously, it all depends on what they do in free agency, but could defensive end end up being the round one pick? Because we know obviously Brandon Bean has had the habit of going more defensive than offensive in regards to their first round picks on there. And two, if there's a name, Ryan, that you actually that no one's really heard of or not know much of, that you are all in on, whether it be late round or not, that's not been mentioned to the Bills. Oof.
Boy, oh boy, you know, I don't know if there's any names that no one knows of yet. And I truly have not done a deep, deep dive yet into the draft. This is the latest I've ever started, to be quite honest. I will say that it wouldn't shock me if DN was a first round pick. I think there's some good players on day two, but if you compare it to wide receiver, there's some really good wide receivers that'll be available on day two of the draft. It goes a little bit faster at DN. So if if in their mind D-end is like one of their top two or top three priorities, like I said, a Chop Robinson makes a lot of sense for them out of Penn State. And there's some other D-ends too. The safety class really intrigues me in terms of some of the names out there. So you look at a Cameron Kitchens, who played at Miami with the new safeties or the new secondary coach that the Bills have. He tested horribly, terribly. His relative athletic score was something like a 1.83. It's low out of 10. I mean, so poor that maybe that drops him in this draft, because he was being talked about as the top safety in this draft class. Teams covet athleticism, though, and I think he could take a stumble, and he could be a late round, day two, early round, you know, day three guy, and I would still take him because his instincts are off the chart. And yeah. I think instincts need to be weighed heavily in terms of safety play. I know he might not run a blazing fast 40, but I watched him at Miami and the way that he played, and he was unbelievable. And there's two safeties from Georgia that, again, the secondary coach worked with at Georgia in 2021. He has some experience with three of these guys, Lassiter being one, and now I'm blanking on the other one's name.
Bullard.
Thank you.
And got Tyreek Smith as well.
Yeah. So, I just got some breaking news. I don't know if it's out there yet, but it looks like maybe Curtis Samuel to the Bills. Let me see if it's out here yet. You guys might begin it.
Just having a scroll.
Yeah, I think we're all on the scroll now.
Tim Settle's gone to the Texans. Can't see it yet.
No, nothing yet.
Well, UK.
Well, if I'm wrong, I apologize to people that are watching this. But
you won't be the first one today.
Yeah. No, Eric Armstead was in the team for about a minute and a half, wasn't he? And then
let's have a look. Curtis, let's just do a search by his name. That'd probably be helpful. There we go. Let's have a look.
Yeah. So something. If it happens, you guys can clip it and show that I had it first before these national guys.
I've already got the little sound bite for the opening part of it, so I've already got it just in case. Lined up.
Okay, so I'm waiting to hear on a response. We'll see how quickly it gets back to me.
I think it's going to be good. I mean, obviously, with the draft, with that now, if that is true, I mean, you've obviously got a good playmaker in Samuel, and obviously, it still doesn't stop you from obviously double dipping and actually doing it. Because I mean, Justin Shorter's, you haven't really seen much of him, but he's that big body guy that hopefully you can develop in, and obviously. I think we've obviously signed Matt Collins, which is more likely going to be more special team depth.
Yeah. And you know, listen, I think that the Bills want Shorter to have some kind of role on this team. He has the build. He has the physicality that you look for. He is something, you know, in terms of the look and the upside and the development. You're hoping you can bring him along, but you bring in a Matt Collins to compete with him and to be the gunner on special teams. And, you know, Andy Isabella is going to be in the mix for one of those back end receiver spots. They could draft, like I said, double dip in the draft. So they're not going to hand him anything, but he's going to certainly be in the mix.
Yeah. Just trying to look. No, still nothing on there, but we'll.
I might be getting a call here in a minute, so I might have to let you guys go, but we'll see.
That's all right. No, I mean, the same. Always. It's good. I mean, they say it's a lot to look forward to, as I said earlier. But it's just tempering or lowering the expectation of it, knowing that there's going to be a struggle in there that we need to just weather the storm, so to speak, because there's a lot of changes coming through for the good thing. And we're all now searching through Twitter. And Ryan, waiting for that.
beautiful audio medium. Three guys searching.
There it is. Aaron Wilson. Bills are signing Samuel to a 3-year, $30 million, with 15 guaranteed.
There we go. You guys can clip that and
the exclusive.
Some breaking news.
That's all right.
It's not quite the guy on the Von Miller signing. Do you remember that?
I remember that.
The guy's eyes just bulging out of his head. Do you think we get one more good year out of Von Miller?
I think they're going to have a much better year than they had this year. I think he is going to look a lot better, you know, coming off this injury, having a full off season to rehab. You know, we'll kind of wait and see. But yeah, it's going to be much better than what it was last year. He was really good that first year, 8 sacks and nine games. I don't know if we'll ever see double digit Von Miller sack season, but I think he's going to be a situational pass rusher and really help in that regard.
Yeah. So we're gonna let you because there's obviously breaking news. I know you told me you're thinking about doing a shout podcast. So I feel
Matt's in class, but I'll probably be going on with him later tonight.
But yeah, no, for everyone that's listening, obviously they should know where to find you and the work do. Just give us one more thing on where you are and what you got in the pipeline.
Yeah, thanks, guys. You can find me on Twitter at Ryan Talbot Bills. You can find my work at nyup.com and syracuse.com. You can find the Shout Buffalo Football Podcast and all your major podcast platforms.
Awesome. So, Ryan, as always, is very, very happy and thankful for you actually coming on the show and talking with us today.
Hey, thanks, guys.
So make sure everyone that's listening obviously follows Ryan, follows myself and Robin, and obviously the UK Bills as well. And for Ryan, Robin, it's me, Matt, saying good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Thank you for listening, and let's go Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, Bills.
Yeah, not us. You don't know anything about heart. You don't know anything about work. Huh? That's who we are. Bills on three. One, two, three.